Welcome to Walking on the Wild Side, a podcast dedicated to exploring the flora and fauna of the Southeast and instilling in you, our listeners, an appreciation and admiration for the beauty and diversity of our natural resources. As always, I'm with my wife, Gabrielle, who through all of our adventures has become quite the naturalist herself.
Hey, y'all, and after a little bit of a hiatus, we'd like to welcome you back to the Wild Side.
We're back. Oh, my gosh. It has been a while, but I've kind of missed this. Have you missed this?
I've missed this.
Yeah, we're sitting out in the back here off of our new back porch, the new Walking on the Wild Side studios for 2024. And we've got the little fire going, and here it is, kind of... What would you call it? Late winter, early spring? What would you call it?
Well, this is early spring. Isn't it officially spring? I mean, we've sprung forward with the time.
Well, we have sprung forward with the time. That's exactly right. So we've had some cool weather here, but also we've had some warm weather. But what's kind of neat, though, is we've kind of been seeing all kinds of stuff outside. We've been hearing all kinds of things at night. We've been hearing some things, even not at night, during the middle of the day. Yeah, we've been doing some hiking and stuff like that, and we've been hearing a lot of the upland chorus frogs.
Yes.
You know, and that kind of got me thinking, well, a good way to kick off 2024 is to actually talk about a really cool little frog. I don't think you've ever heard this frog or seen this frog, but we don't have them around here. They're kind of more in the Appalachians and further up north than that. So you ever heard of a wood frog?
I've heard of them.
Have you ever heard one?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that. But they're kind of an interesting frog because it's early enough to hear spring peepers.
Yeah, we have
early enough to hear upland chorus frog.
We've been hearing lots of them.
Yeah, and that upland chorus frog sounded like you'd running your thumbnail over the old plastic comb.
Yeah.
And of course the spring peepers
Welcome
got that
to
peep,
the 80s.
Peep. Yeah, no doubt. Well, the wood frog is kind of a different little frog because you'd hear him calling early spring. In fact, I almost say you could hear him calling in the wintertime. So they're pretty tolerant of cold. So we're going to talk about these guys a little bit. And I think what would be kind of interesting, too, is when you talk about this frog, it's not just the frog himself, which is kind of cool. There's some really interesting things about this frog. Mm. I can't wait to share with you about him because I've heard him up in the mountains. I've heard him when I've been going up and doing a little photography up in the mountains and things. And every time I hear this little old frog, I start to think about why, you know, they're so neat. Frog music.
Yes.
Yeah, frog music. But he's, believe it or not, he's a frog that lives in kind of unfrog-like areas.
Oh.
I mean, he can be found far from the water. So he's not necessarily, you know, right there in the water and stuff. Would you believe it? This is the only frog that can be found above the Arctic Circle.
What?
Yes, they have actually been found.
Really?
In northern Alaska, right? There's a place called Prospect Creek. And Prospect Creek actually recorded minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, my God.
And that frog lives there. So that should give you a little hint about kind of how interesting this frog is. I don't want to say he's a cool frog because if he's living up at Prospect Creek in Alaska, he's a cold frog.
Yeah.
Not just
yeah,
a cold frog.
He is.
But they're about an inch and a half, probably 2 inches long, and the females are a little bit larger than the males, and they can be kind of a greenish to brown color, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they got a few little characteristics and stuff. They got these little raised lines that run down their backs. And a lot of frogs have that. They're called dorsolateral folds. You've seen them. Like when you've seen leopard frogs, looks like they got a little paired ridge that runs down their back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They also have kind of a...
Kind of makes them look mean.
It does. It kind of makes them... To me, it looks like they're folded out of paper. Because you see that little raised, little almost like a hem, if you will, like, you know, a little raised edge, like on upholstery or something like that. But they also have a kind of a white lip line, which is kind of neat. But my favorite thing about the wood frogs, they got this little black mask.
Hmm.
I mean, so they're a cute little guy. So you think I'm about an inch and a half, almost 2 inches. That's about as big as the first digit of your thumb, I guess, if you will.
Okay.
You know, so... They only live a couple years, and like I said, they live in the northwestern part of our state, South Carolina, but there's a few populations in, like, Alabama. There's some isolated populations out in the western states, but typically, they're kind of found in, like, western North Carolina, and all the places we hike have a tendency to be in, like, western North Carolina, right?
Well, yeah, that in upstate South Carolina. So we'll have them in upstate.
We do have them in the upstate. Yeah, we sure do. Yeah, and that's the interesting thing because, you know, when you ride along like the Blue Ridge Parkway and stuff, think about the Blue Ridge Parkway, and that's where you're going to find these frogs too, in those higher elevations. But then also, you'll see them in the higher elevations all the way up into the Northeast, and of course through Canada. But then of course that also means Alaska too. And they're typical little frogs. I mean, they're typical because they eat, you know, insects and snails and slugs and worms and spiders. And sometimes they'll eat little things like little small salamanders, things like that. But for the most part, insects and other invertebrates are what they eat. But they're the first frogs that become active and begin calling during mating season.
Oh.
The very first ones. And their mating call is kind of a sharp, And you've heard me say this before, frogs are explosive breeders.
Yes.
So basically that means after a rainstorm, man, they come out in mass and they just start calling, you know. And so that's actually, that's kind of a mating behavior that kind of gives them an advantage. All right. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But I want to play their call. Their call is kind of interesting hear it. When you hear it, I almost kind of guarantee you've probably heard it before. So let me see if you guys can hear this right quick. You hear that?
It sounds like a bunch of goats.
I think that's kind of a... Now, to me, that kind of, it almost closely, believe it or not, sounds like leopard frogs. So we've heard leopard frogs and everything before, too.
Yeah.
And they sound very similar to that. But so imagine you get an ice cold, like we've had here recently. You know, you've had a cold rain in the 40s, something like that. That's not normally what you associate with, I think, probably like a regular frogs and stuff. They'll come out, I mean, and it's the wintertime. You don't expect to hear frogs calling, but boy, they start coming out. And the cool thing is, when they mate, they lay the eggs, of course, and the eggs get fertilized. The tadpoles develop kind of between a week and a month or so real quickly.
Hmm.
I mean, that's not only are they explosive breeders, but they also have a accelerated development as well. And we'll talk about why that's important as well, too. But since they're the earliest mating frog in our area, they also, they lay eggs in these temporary pools that are formed by these rains.
Ephemeral pools?
Oh. Why, you know another name for ephemeral pool?
Yes.
Starts with a V?
Vernal.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Before. I always have a hard time with that one.
That's actually an adaptation that kind of gives them advantage too. So they're early. It's cold. They're the first ones out there mating. They have an abbreviated life cycle because they lay eggs and then they mate quickly and they get fertilized quickly and develop quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They also lay these eggs in these ephemeral pools. Because you know what's crazy is these pools are temporary, so they dry up. Well, their life cycle is abbreviated, so it can kind of be done by the time this pool dries
can
up.
Take advantage of that.
Yeah, but you know what the cool thing about it is? There's no predators in these pools.
Right.
In regular ponds and stuff like that, there's going to be fish that can eat the eggs, stuff like that, a lot of predators. In these vernal pools, you don't have nearly as many predators as you would. So those are all kind of interesting things, too, about this little frog that is adapted. So during those first heavy early spring rains, you know, a lot of times there's still snow on the ground, and these frogs are calling up a storm and finding a mate. You know, now sometimes they'll lay these eggs in not exactly what you call, like, a pool. When you look at it, you're like, oh, that's a big pond right there, and it's a temporary pond. It can also be in, like, knot holes, stump holes. Things like that, even in some areas in, you know, where these pools are hanging out. But the problem is, too, it's interesting, and it just always amazes me when I think about these frogs and why they do what they do. These vernal pools, if it's springtime and all the green is starting to pop, well, all those plants are becoming active and they need water, and they're soaking the water up out of the ground, so those pools disappear quickly.
Right.
Well, by doing it in the wintertime when they don't have leaves, it doesn't soak up the water as quickly.
Look at that.
So it's interesting. How do these guys, and of course, one thing I didn't mention, of course, I assume most of you guys know this, these are cold-blooded animals. They take on the temperature of their surroundings. So the colder it is, the less active they should become. How do these cold-blooded amphibians stay active in these cold temperatures and in these waters in the spring? I mean, have you ever thought about that? I always ask the same question about salamanders. Salamanders migrate to pools in the wintertime. Well, my gosh, they're cold-blooded. How can they do that?
Yeah, I never thought about it.
Yeah, it's interesting and how they even survive winter. And they do survive winter. It's a hibernation, but with reptiles and amphibians, we call it brumation.
Brumation.
And now, like aquatic frogs, right? Aquatic frogs will...
Like a good cold beer, you just got to brew for a while.
Got to brew. And the person you drink it with is your brewmate.
Yes.
And in fact, you have a wine glass that's made by a company called Brewmate.
I have a Brewmate.
Oh, that's interesting. I've got to explore that and figure out why it's called that. But you think about these little frogs, like let's say aquatic frogs. Aquatic frogs, they'll get in the water and they'll just basically become very sluggish, slow, immobile, and just hang out on the bottom and their body processes slow down. A lot of times they'll swim around and like...
Sounds like me this past weekend.
yeah, we were both brumating this weekend, that's for sure. What these little frogs will swim around in the water. Just slowly swim around. And that's just enough movement to oxygenate, you know, and get around. They'll also hang out at the bottom of like little waterfalls, like seeps and stuff that provide oxygenated water. So they can kind of survive these aquatic ones. They can even go in deeper water that doesn't freeze, right? Mm. But they have to be near these oxygen-rich areas. And a lot of times they're usually on top of the mud. They're not burrowing down in the mud. But these little wood frogs burrow down in leaf litter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they're not below the frost line or anything. They're basically they're exposed. Mm. So do you know what this little frog does that is just so amazing?
I can't even imagine, but I bet you're going to tell us.
He freezes solid.
What?
Like, completely solid. I'm not talking about,
like
squishy. Yes. In fact, his eyes turn white. The lenses in his eyes freeze.
That's wicked.
And his heart stops beating. The brain is not active. He's not even breathing. He literally goes into suspended animation.
Wow.
Now, you think about that. Most animals go into a very slow metabolism.
Yeah.
They just slow everything down.
Slows down, kind of like hummingbirds go into torpor.
Yeah.
Bears go into hibernation.
That's exactly right. But they're still breathing a little bit, right? They're still...
Yeah.
Not these guys. They're done. Like I said, Prospect Creek, which is where the brooks range, the mountains up in Alaska, minus 80 degrees, and these frogs were in there brumating.
Wow.
And it's intrigued scientists for a long time. And so biologists, they've studied these frogs and they've learned a bunch of stuff. Now, like I said, most frogs will kind of survive northern winters by hibernating deep underwater,
right?
In deeper water and stuff. But their body temperature never truly falls below freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're different. These wood frogs are completely different. But they found out that the way they do this is their livers and their bodies produce liquids that don't freeze. And when I say don't freeze, they don't form ice crystals. Okay? So when you think about ice, when ice forms crystals, it becomes little sharp crystals. That can actually puncture cells.
Right.
It can puncture organs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when blood freezes, there's no mechanism to deliver oxygen and nutrients to organs. So usually when an animal freezes, extreme metabolic damage occurs.
Yeah, like hypothermia. That's what hypothermia is.
Absolutely. And ice even injures the cells because when something freezes, it draws water out of the cells. And that causes dehydration, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that, of course, scrambles the interior structure of cells and also fractures cell walls. So realistically, the result is basically deadly internal damage, but these frogs have evolved how to freeze solid for up to 8 months.
Oh my God.
So what happens is at the beginning of winter, ice fills their body cavity. It encases the organs. Now, ice crystals are formed kind of between layers of skin and muscle, and like I said, their eyes even turn white because the lens freezes. But the wood frog's liver produces a large amount of glucose, and it flushes that glucose into every cell, and that syrupy sugar solution actually prevents the cells from freezing, and it binds up the water molecules inside to prevent dehydration. So on the one hand, the wood frog's body allows ice to form around the outsides of the organs. So basically, it encases the organs to protect them, but it prevents ice from forming on the inside of the cells. So it basically avoids the damage that most animals suffer when they freeze.
That is crazy.
So what?
Now, how did it come up with that adaptation?
I don't know. It had to be just, you know, evolution over time. So if you were walking through the woods and you kicked up some leaves and you found this little brumating frog, what would it look like?
I would think he was dead.
Well, you would. There's no muscle movement. There's no heartbeat. There's no breathing. He's like a lump of rock carved into the shape of a frog.
Yeah.
He's alive, but it's in suspended animation.
He's alive.
Now, in the spring, he thaws out from the inside out. And then all of a sudden the heart starts to beat, the brain activates, and then the legs start moving. And nobody understands, scientists have not figured out what starts the wood frog's heart after being frozen for the entire winter. I mean, once this frog is fully thawed, I mean, it's off into the woods to try and find a pond and a mating partner.
Yeah, he's good to go.
He's good to go, and he's completely undamaged by these conditions that basically it's fatal to every other animal.
That's crazy.
So as crazy as that is, right, it's an amazing adaptation. Scientists are studying. Do you think scientists are studying it just for fun?
No.
Why do we normally study animals?
Well, it could be for a number of different things. For health reasons, like it translates to human functioning and
exactly.
health.
We learn more about ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. So we learn about animals and how they do things. And also, of course, you know, scientists study animals, too, for that bioengineering. Right.
Yeah, that was going to be my next.
Yeah. Biomimicry is another name for it. That's mm-hmm. how we get the airplane. You know, that's how we get the helicopter studying dragonflies.
We talked about the peregrine falcon.
Yes. And the nostril.
Yeah, that's exactly. Aeronautics.
And well, so what do you think they could learn from the frog, from this wood frog? And I was fascinated, more read into this, more fascinating it became.
Well, you hear about all of those eccentric people that have themselves cryogenically frozen so they could come back in the future.
Absolutely.
Supposedly Walt Disney.
Supposedly Walt Disney. And I think there was also one out there about Ted Williams, you know, the baseball player and stuff too. That's all kind of funky. But so, all right. So think of this scenario. Someone's in a car wreck. They've donated their organs, right, for a transplant.
Yeah.
They have a very short window of time to get those organs to a donor. If they could learn, through studying the wood frog, how to preserve those organs to have a bigger window of opportunity, that would be medically game-changing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, it would.
I mean, you think about organ transplants. I mean, it would also make organs more accessible to other people as well. Not just like a real hurried response to try and find a person that's available, one to transfer it into.
Right.
What about diabetes? Mm. When people have blood glucose levels above normal, usually it's about 2 to 10 times normal levels, they have an increased risk of like complications like eye disease, kidney disease, heart attacks, and strokes, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Would you agree that it's probably an epidemic in the United States, diabetes?
Yeah, I think it's an increasing problem with the obesity issues. And
every time I see it, though, I think of Wilford Brimley. Diabetes.
Diabetes.
I got diabetes.
Got a touch of the sugar.
Got a touch. That's my mama talking right there. Well, since hibernating wood frogs get increased glucose from their liver, and they can tolerate blood sugar levels 100 times higher than normal without any damage, obviously, it'd be great to study that for diabetes, right? Yeah. Understanding how these frogs can tolerate extreme glucose levels and fluctuations maybe can help with the management of people who have high blood sugar and people with diabetes, right?
Wow, that'd be something.
And here's a really intriguing one. Studying wood frogs may also benefit our understanding of strokes and how to help stroke victims.
Really?
Well, a stroke occurs when there's a blockage in a blood vessel that carries oxygen to the brain, right? Yeah. Or it can be a blood vessel bursting, right?
Yeah.
Both types of strokes have to deal with the aftermath of damage caused by a lack of oxygen to the brain in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
Scientists are studying how the wood frog actually can stop blood circulation and start it again many months later without blood clots or injury.
Mm.
So if they could understand that mechanism with the light, which allows treating people after a stroke who've had their blood flow temporarily halted would be huge.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's this little diminutive little 1.5 inch, 2 inch frog, studying that frog and its adaptations and its evolution to handling extreme cold temperatures may actually be an answer to some of the biggest debilitating things that happen to humans.
Wow.
Is that not crazy?
That's incredible. So because they're able to do that, what is their lifespan?
2 to 3 years.
Oh, really?
Which is like typical of little frogs, right? Little tiny frogs and stuff like
you
that.
Would
yeah.
think with not with their bodies not having to work so hard.
Well, so lifespan is an average. And a lot of these critters, they have a larval cycle. A lot of them get eaten in the larval cycle. A lot of them get eaten in the egg cycle. And a lot of them get eaten as first-year little froggies.
Mm.
So, yeah. So but, yeah, 2 to 3 years is pretty good. But, man, I tell you what. So, you know, just studying these little frogs. I was always fascinated with them because I had always known that the cool thing about a wood frog is they freeze solid. But the more I studied and learned about them, the more I thought, I just cannot believe that this has so many positive implications for medical.
Yeah. No
I mean, kidding. That's incredible. So hopefully that's kind of a good story
that
for these little frogs. That's not saying they're important.
Promise.
Well, it does. Yeah. It, but even if the wood frog didn't have that stuff, they'd still be a cool frog.
Well, yeah.
Right. But the fact that they do have some benefits for human science and for medical is actually a positive. So what do you think? Was that a good podcast?
I like it.
That's kind of neat, wasn't it?
Now I want to see a wood frog.
Yeah, I know. We got to go see. And they're calling right now. I mean, they're up in the Appalachians, and it's crazy that it can be cold up there. I mean, here we are in the 30s today. Those frogs are probably already calling, which is kind of neat. And we went from, like, what, 30s over the weekend and rain, 70s, and then it's going to get down to 35 tonight, and then it's going to be 80 on Thursday.
We haven't been down to 30. It hasn't frozen. It was,
well, no, we there's a frost warning tonight.
Oh, okay.
Can you believe that? So we're going to go through a 40-degree flux today, which is kind of interesting. We need to be wood frogs ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, it might come in handy.
That's right. Well, so that's it for that podcast, our first podcast of 2024. And
that's right.
I have missed it. Have you missed it?
Yeah.
I have too. I mean, so we had, gosh, one problem after another. We had issues with our recorder.
Yeah, we had a great podcast with a special guest ready to go for y'all, and we got done with all of it, and Marvin went to edit it, and nothing.
The card was corrupted.
Corrupted card.
It even showed that they had recorded it, and it was corrupted. So a corrupted card, we had some microphone issues and stuff, and so we ended up taking a hiatus, if you will. But you know what? I'm happy to be doing it again, and the wood frog is a great way to kick it off.
Absolutely.
So I think, yeah, got any more questions about the wood frog?
I asked all mine.
Yeah, you did. You got some good questions.
Thanks.
You had some good answers, too. I could tell you've learned a lot over these past years of doing this podcast. So.
I listen.
I know you do. Maybe I don't. I don't know which it is. Well, I don't know. I'm just glad we're back doing these podcasts and everything. I hope our audience is glad that we're back doing these podcasts again. We're really going to do some fun stuff this year. We're going to have some podcasts on location. We got a special guest coming up in a couple of episodes I think you guys may like. And it'll be a very interesting subject, too. I know when we did the doomed podcast with our friend, you were blown away by some of the stuff that was revealed in his podcast.
Yes.
And it's fascinating stuff. Let's just say it ain't got nothing to do with the present, ain't got nothing to do with the future. But that's going to be our hint when we talk about it next time. But
it's got to do with the way back.
The way back. That's exactly right.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting about these wood frogs and all these other beautiful things that we're able to see and do podcasts on, you know you're never going to see those things unless you're outside.
Walking on the wild side.